Na 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 Batman.
Hello, beautiful humans. I'm Tiny Castle.
And I'm Benjamin Mead.
And you're listening to Just a Minute. Just a Minute is an educational podcast where we break down justice topics in 30 minutes or less. Today's topic, what is a vigilante? Welcome, and thanks for joining us. Hello, Ben.
Well, hello, Tiny, and hello to all of our wonderful listeners.
Yes, today we'd like to give a shout out before we begin to our three listeners, one of which is my second cousin, Venus.
Wait, you said our three listeners.
Yeah, I think we have three listeners.
Well, thank you, all three of you. go ahead.
Which Venus is definitely one. I just wanted to give a shout out to Venus because when I was sort of thinking about this podcast and our goals, family and friends who don't have a college degree and don't want to listen to us normally wax on about, whatever topic, I was thinking about, people like my cousin Venus as the audience. So I'm happy that she and two other people are listening. Thank you for joining us, family, friends. Keep listening. All right. Shall we get started?
Yeah, let's do it.
Okay. So today we're going to introduce the topic of vigilantes. Ben, what is a vigilante?
Well, we both know actually a lot about vigilantes, don't we, Tiny?
Do we?
Yeah. Yeah, because we're writing a whole book on vigilantes.
We are.
You and I together, yeah.
Great.
So today we're just going to give a broad overview of vigilantism, but okay. In the future expect more episodes about different types of vigilantes.
Most definitely.
Digilantes or cyber vigilantes. So before we talk about vigilantes, Tiny, I want to ask you a question. Who is your favorite superhero and why?
Yeah. Okay. Well, this one's easy. Black Panther. Why? Okay. Why? Because I have two baby Black Panthers at home, my knights, Sir Davos Seaworth of Flea Bottom and Sir Brienne of Tarth. I love you, my baby Black Panthers.
Oh, you cute kitties. You cute babies.
I know your favorite. No, 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 no.
Batman.
We should have done that together.
Yeah, Batman is definitely my favorite.
Yeah, for sure.
And you did the na 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 the 60s
yes,
theme song.
Yes.
So as a kid, I loved that show. Like it was on every day when I came home from school. And it's kind of like got the like the camp element. But
yeah.
As a kid, I took that so seriously.
Yeah.
I remember this one episode where I forget who it was. It was one of the randoms, like Clock King or something. But anyway, he had like Robin up on the bell tower and tied up and dropped him off and Batman threw his batarang and Robin caught it in his teeth. And, Batman pulled him up and said something like, "Robin, old chum, this just demonstrates the importance of good dental hygiene." And of course I would take that so serious, like, oh yeah, Batman is so right. You should definitely brush your teeth for sure.
Oh,
and every episode ended in the cliffhanger.
Yeah.
Like they were tied up in some buzz saw machine and I was just
sure.
Like, oh my God, like they're never gonna get out of this. How are they gonna get out of this time? But anyway, that
back
was kind of
the,
yeah, that was yeah. kind of the old campy Batman.
Yes, of course.
And if we run out of time we can cut all of
that. Oh yeah, it's fine.
But when we think of kind of the more modern iteration of Batman, he's the kind of the Dark Knight. And Batman really illustrates some important points about vigilantism.
Tell me more.
Yeah. So Batman or Bruce Wayne is motivated by the, first of all, more specifically, unjust death of his parents.
Yes.
And more broadly, the crime conditions in Gotham City. He's dissatisfied with the state of order mm-hmm. in the city and with society. And Batman is necessary because of the corruption and the ineffectiveness of the Gotham City Police Department. So in some stories, the GCPD is corrupt and they're in bed with the mafia and Batman has to fight corruption. And then in other stories, the GCPD is kind of like bumbling fools and they're not capable of dealing with the serious crime posed by supervillains like the Joker.
So a lack of procedural justice in Gotham City.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, for sure, for sure. So Bruce Wayne adopts the persona and dresses up like a bat, and the costume represents his mission and protects his identity as a vigilante, and is supposed to be scary and intimidating.
Yes.
And then finally, an important point is that Batman's solution to problem is retributive violence. So we've got crime and disorder out of control. The vigilante solution to that is to beat the holy bejesus out of criminals.
Okay. Yeah. Well,
holy bejesus, Batman.
Okay, so Batman is a vigilante, but you really still haven't answered the question of sort of what makes him a vigilante, or what is vigilantism?
Oh, yeah, right, true. My bad. So the term vigilante is an anglicized version of the Spanish word by the same name, which means vigilance. So the Spanish word comes from the Latin verb that means to watch or to guard. So a vigilante is a watch person or a guardian. And vigilantism is the extra legal response or extra legal prevention, investigation or punishment of crime or deviance, other types of offenses against society.
Got it.
And extra legal means against the law. So I said extra legal prevention.
Outside the law.
Right. So the criminal justice system, for example, exists to catch and to punish criminals, but vigilantes catch and punish criminals outside of the law without calling the police on their own. So we might also think of vigilantism as popular justice, and not popular as in like, popular like a lot of people like you popular, but popular related to the word people.
Yes.
People, ordinary people enacting or exacting justice rather than the criminal justice system.
Right.
So instead of calling the police, people do something about perceived crimes themselves.
Yes, taking the law into their own hands.
Right, taking the law into your own hands, the slogan of vigilantism.
Yes, and being the judge, jury, and executioner, right?
Right. Good. So when we think about things that vigilantes might do in terms of like prevention activities or patrols, you might remember the Guardian Angels who patrolled the New York City subway system. Or now we see a number of like far right organizations patrolling the borders, trying to catch people crossing the border.
Right.
And then we can also think about, you know, that prevention, patrols, or punishment. Again, I mentioned like retributive violence earlier, killing or shooting alleged violators, or lynchings would be an example of extra legal punishment of air quote crime, disorder,
right.
Threats to society, threats to the social order.
Okay. Anything else?
Other than what we've talked about already, other scholars have added that vigilantism should be planned, organized, premeditated. So it's not something that, you are walking down the street and you see somebody getting mugged and you say, okay, I've got to help this person. But rather something that's kind of like planned ahead of time, proactive, premeditated. And also, I've kind of already talked about this, but vigilantism is a reaction to threats to the social order. So we've talked a lot about crime, but it doesn't necessarily have to be crimes like robbery or theft or murder. But it could be things that kind of threaten the social norms of the day.
Yes. Got it.
So vigilantism has a long history in the U.S.
It does.
Boo, boring history. So do you want to, I'll give you the boring sections. Do you want to talk a little bit about some important aspects of the history of vigilantism in the U.S.?
Sure. I'll save a lot of this for another episode if people are interested, but I have to say that let's focus on like a couple of interesting tidbits. One, the myth of the lone vigilante, which Batman represents that myth of the lone vigilante, right? That myth where they're punishing bad people because somebody's got to do it. This dates all the way back to America's beginning in the Plymouth Colony with a man named Miles Standish, who was a gunslinger in the 1620s and 30s. He was kind of just going around using violence, you know, to enforce his own ideas about justice. But we have a long history. One of the most well-known vigilante groups was the South Carolina Regulators of the 1760s. They pursued villains across state lines into North Carolina and Virginia, retrieving stolen property and, like, executing people along the way. So they were after the outlaws. I would put that in quotes because I'll come back to that. But they monitored, surveilled, and punished, claiming to have extinguished all outlaw threat from the backcountry communities by March of 1768. So what happens? Well, they're pretty good at getting rid of the outlaws.
Really?
Hmm. So once they've done that, they moved on to policing morality. So they punished men who didn't provide for their families. Mm-hmm. They punished immoral women and, people who refused to work. Those lazy, folks who would not work. So, they did way more than just punish outlaws. It got so bad that the government eventually steps in to try and curb their enthusiastic punishment of fellow citizens. But the regulators provided an early prototype for organized vigilante activity in groups. Groups of regulators popped up in the North and West. So they were an early model, if you will.
Hmm. Interesting.
Really? Is it interesting?
Well, more interesting than I thought it would be for boring history.
Okay. Well, I do want to also mention that most committees did have a manifesto. One of the earliest incarnations, 1780, of this is thought to be authored by none other than Colonel William Lynch, Origin of Lynch's Law. Lynch law was originally used in the backcountry and the Virginia Piedmont regions to punish alleged criminals without due process, but it did evolve in the 19th century to become synonymous with hanging or killing by illegal group action.
Well, I was just getting ready to say that's ironic that Colonel William Lynch,
yes,
as a vigilante when we have lynchings, but now I know that that's where the term came from.
Exactly.
Okay, I didn't know that. Yeah, so I think you highlight an important point that we recognize that a lot of times in popular media like Batman or Charles Bronson, the lone vigilante stalking the night and seeking vengeance, but oftentimes we see that vigilantism in real life is much more likely to happen in groups rather than individuals.
Correct, correct.
Yeah, so another good example of that contemporarily, we've already talked about Batman, fictional superheroes, is real life superheroes.
Yes.
And
yes.
You and I have done some research on real life superheroes, haven't we?
We have, mm-hmm. Yes. Actually, I learned about the Harrisonburg chapter of the real life superheroes from a sticker on a pole downtown.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, so you found out that there were real-life superheroes in town, and then we got interested and started doing some research on that.
Correct.
But real-life superheroes are individuals who create their own superhero persona so that they're not dressing up like Superman or Batman, but they create their own superhero identity, and they dress up, and they engage in community safety patrols. There's some examples that we discovered and talked to of real-life superheroes who do go out and do their activity alone, but mm-hmm. by and large, what we found was that real-life superheroes came together in a community, dressed up together, went on safety patrols in the community, oftentimes kind of patrolling nightlife area and, like drunken bars and helping homeless people and helping drunk people get home or get into their Ubers.
Yeah, so there were examples of those lone vigilantes, but the mm-hmm. vigilante patrols with more than one were mm-hmm. more common.
Yeah, and by and large, real-life superheroes we found to be, we argued that they were vigilantes because of their activities, and they're relatively harmless. There are a few examples of real-life superheroes, getting into fights and getting in trouble and getting arrested by the police, but by and large, we found that, they're really more kind of interested in public visibility and attention and photos.
Right.
But nonetheless, they did, dress up to be like pretty intimidating and scary and carry weapons like taser knuckles.
The taser knuckles.
Which, before we did that research, I didn't know were such a thing. But they're like brass knuckles, but instead of like heavy, when you punch somebody that you like tase them and chalk them. So taser knuckles are a real thing, audience, that I didn't know
but
existed.
He had not used them on anyone.
Yeah, true. They're just kind of like for show and intimidation. Most of these guys didn't get in.
It's part of the costume.
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
So what are some other modern day examples that we have seen of vigilantism that we would define that way based on the definition?
Yeah, so we can remember the case of Ahmaud Arbery, the young man in Georgia who was out for a jog and was chased down and shot by an armed father-son duo, who the father was a retired police officer. And the men believed Ahmaud had burglarized construction site, obviously a little bit more complicated in terms of race being involved. But their defense was that Georgia allowed private citizens to arrest someone who they observed committing a crime, but ultimately they were convicted
Yes. And we might do an episode where I just talk specifically about citizens' arrest and stand your ground laws separately, because we don't really have time to do it in this episode. So, but it's worthy of another additional episode.
Another well-known instance of recent vigilantism would be Kyle Rittenhouse, a 17-year-old kid who joined a group of citizens in Wisconsin who were protecting people's property from protest and unrest. He shot three people, killed two of them. He was acquitted based on self-defense. But the larger point related to vigilantism is that, you know, he actively organized, armed himself, went somewhere else to protect other people's property.
Yes.
We might even also think about the January 6th insurrection as vigilantism. So you've got a group of private individuals attempting to correct a, air quotes, perceived injustice through violence and force in the face of existing legal structures, not doing anything about it.
Right. I think political scientists would call that an attempted coup, but and we can call it vigilantism under this definition.
Yeah, multiple applicable concepts here.
Yeah.
I've also read stories over the past few weeks about far-right militia groups like the Proud Boys shining swastikas on buildings with laser pointers, like a nice little Nazi bat symbol.
Oh, my God.
But on that note, you are more of an expert on far-right extremism and activity than me, but it seems like a major element of vigilantism, both historically and even now, has been about racial control and power. Do you want to talk a little bit about that
before we close? Yeah, I think that's also worthy of a separate episode. But yes, vigilante movements were mostly made up of local elites. So the groups represented their power and their values. During the Civil War era, vigilance committees formed to protect slavery in the South and protect the enslaved from the fugitive slave law in the North. So some people think of the KKK as one of the more notable vigilante movements, sort of back to this, you know, idea about definitional confusion is that scholars debate whether the KKK should be classified as a vigilante or a terrorist movement. But, you know, they believed in white supremacy and they used violence to uphold it.
Right. And that was kind of, you know, one of the things that I was referencing earlier when I said, like, vigilante activity a lot of times is not, may not be directly about crime, but kind of maintaining social norms and order.
Yes, a threat to social order. Mm. And we call them vigilantes because they do have the characteristics that you described earlier. But I also think it's important to point out that vigilante groups that predated the KKK, the vigilance committees that I referenced in the 18th and 19th centuries, once, you know, they removed the outlaw threat, they were more than happy to switch to policing morality and politics and race. Urban vigilantes went after anyone deemed a social threat, and this included, at different points in time, Catholics, Jews, enslaved Africans, Chinese laborers, immigrants, and people advocating for civil rights. So, like I said, we could probably cover the history of the American vigilante in a separate episode if people are interested. But back to your question, the answer is yes.
Okay, great. Well, as you said, more to come on vigilantism.
Yes, yes.
Thanks, everybody, for listening.
Thank you.
So to close
we
our show.
You.
Yeah, we love you. So to close our show, it's our Minute to Spin It, where we each give our 30-second takeaway from today's show. So, Timey, what's your spin in just a minute?
Today, my spin is actually a quote from journalist William Burroughs, who wrote about American vigilantes, and it is, "Americans are a people who have always responded with more than enough rope." Ben, what's your spin?
Na 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 na. Batman is super fun in the movies and on TV, but real life vigilantism is scary, and people should not be taking the law into their own hands.
Yeah, don't do it. This podcast is sponsored by the Gandhi Center at JMU. See the show notes for links to articles and studies discussed on the podcast. Please help us decide what justice topics to cover by sending suggestions to our email address at gandhicenter@jmu.edu or DM us on Instagram at gandhicenterjmu.